It would turn the Big 12 regular season championship into a Big 12 tournament championship. And now they're two wins away from the ultimate prize. Miami will not shoot it. The last 12 seconds will drip off the clock. Don't worry about the mules. Just load the wagon and let's ride it all the way to New Orleans, baby. Your Kansas Jayhawks march on to the Final Four.
It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go,
oh my.
He's a rapper so fly.
Philadelphia, born and raised. On the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, laxing, relaxing, or cooling, or shooting some b-ball outside of the school.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Hee.
The hairbrush is my microphone, and I'd be jamming out, looking in the mirror, acting out their songs on bended knee. Point is, I love Boyz II Men.
Right now on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency at 118 North Mill and Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Call them at 738-5701.
Well, yes, it is time to talk to the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. And, Brian, are you in New Orleans? Are you partying up and having a good time yet?
You know, we are having a good time. Not partying it up necessarily, but there will probably be a party or two between now and tip-off on Saturday, and then hopefully we got a whole lot of partying to do once we complete the job down here. But we did at least do some preliminary scouting in Bourbon Street last night. We got in around 5, and our luggage wasn't here yet, so as a crew we decided to take a walk down Bourbon Street, which, when you got a point guard like Greg Gurley, who kind of knows the lay of the land on the best watering holes in America,
uh-huh.
We made sure we tested everything out from the Modelos to, they make some pretty good, like, frozen daiquiris down here, too. So let's just say while there wasn't heavy partying, there was some advanced scouting done, not only on the Villanova Wildcats, but on some good spots to go should we win come Saturday night.
I got to share the story with you. In 2012, when KU went to New Orleans and made it to the national title game, and they ended up losing in Kentucky, a friend of mine and I, we drove all the way from Beloit, Kansas, all the way to New Orleans. We stayed in Baton Rouge because the hotels are way too costly in New Orleans. So we drove back and forth from the events of the Final Four that week. And so we went down to Bourbon Street, and we went to the establishments. We checked out the watering holes, and I think we got there at 11 in the morning, and there wasn't like tons of people on Bourbon Street, and you could walk around, you could move around, everything was great. And then eventually we went into an establishment, and we were there inside that establishment for a while, had a great time, met up some other KU fans. And Brian, when we walked out, I felt like I had been transformed into a whole nother world. I walked out. First of all, I went in. It was daylight, and there wasn't tons of people. You could move around freely. Walked out. It was people packed. Bourbon Street was just packed. It was dark, or the sun had gone down. I don't know how long I was in that establishment, but the point being is, it was just a completely wild and almost out of body experience. And Bourbon Street can be a lot of fun, and New Orleans can be a lot of fun, and I'm sure a lot of KU fans are going to have a blast, especially if they cut down the nets on Monday.
Yeah, no doubt. I've always said that while everybody seems to love San Antonio as their favorite Final Four location because Kansas won there in 2008, to me, New Orleans is the best spot, and there's no night at any Final Four better than the Friday night before action opens on Saturday when all four teams are still alive,
yep.
All four fan bases are drunk on optimism and other things, and they all converge on Bourbon Street, and it's amazing because you just see the Villanova and the Carolina blue and the Duke blue and the Kansas and all that, and it's all mixed together, and everybody's just, there's a little bit of trash talk, but it's mostly playful at that point, and it's fun. Now, with Duke Carolina, it may not be playful. Who knows?
Yeah.
That could turn a little bit nasty down there. But if you can get past the smell, which is a combination of horse manure, vomit, and urine, and I'm not trying to be funny.
No, you're right.
Yeah. pass the smell, it's actually a pretty good sign. And that Friday night when everybody's still in the mix, it's so much fun. And it's amazing how different it feels just one night later when half the teams are done and going home. And you got a few out there drowning their sorrows, but by and large, a lot of them just don't even come out. That Friday night, that to me is the best night that any Final Four site in the country can host. When you've got New Orleans, Friday, Bourbon Street, it's pretty sweet.
I agree with you, and you pointed out all the blue, so it's going to be a little bit harder to find everybody if you get lost in a crowd because everybody's blue, as you mentioned. Blue. You talk about blue bloods, and Villanova,
Brooklyn,
I think.
Some red.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Wear the red to stand out, or maybe you don't want to stand out. I don't know, depending on the situation. But, you know, Villanova is not, you know, the actual true blue blood per se over all those years like Carolina, Duke, and Kansas is. But Villanova, I think, obviously in the last 10 to 15 years, you could consider them a blue blood and what they've been able to accomplish. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. All right. Let's delve into this. Let's go back to the Elite Eight game. Well, actually, I'm going to go back a little bit further. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the Providence game because that was a ways back. But what stood out to me, Brian, and this is something that I had concerns about with Kansas going into the tournament. First of all, you didn't know what Remy Martin was going to bring to the table. Two, you might have been concerned, as I was, with David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot with the injury going in, and McCormick, you know, just bringing it consistently. And one of the other concerns I had going into this tournament was Kansas's, I don't know, I thought there was inconsistencies defensively this year. You even said on our show, I think a week or two ago, that Kansas is not a great defensive team. They're a good defensive team that at times can play great defense. But man, I look back, and the first half against Providence, that was just a tremendous defensive performance. And KU should have been up 20-25 at halftime. They weren't, but their defense was phenomenal. Second half against Miami of Florida was just phenomenal. The switching, and they took Augusti out of the game after he lit him up like a Christmas tree in the first half. I mean, to me, some people, and even I, was questioning whether or not KU was a legitimate national title contender from the standpoint of there are things they need to do better if they're going to win it all and cut the nets down on Monday in New Orleans. And now, after seeing what they've done, taking their defense to another level, and of course, we didn't know what Remy was going to do, and Remy's been terrific. And then, of course, Ochai coming out of maybe a little bit of a funk offensively, but in fairness to Ochai, Brian, he's played pretty good defensively. All of a sudden, you sit here and you go, my God, if they play like they did against Miami second half, there's nobody that's going to beat this team.
Yeah, they're clearly the team to beat if that's the version of Kansas you get. I mean, Duke's going to have more projected NBA draft picks, but up until 2 weeks ago, sign me up to play Duke. I mean, I was sitting in my living room with our broadcast crew on Selection Sunday, and we were all saying, who's the number two seed you want? And based on their exit from the ACC tournament and their home loss to North Carolina on Coach K's final game at Cameron Indoor, they looked a little out of sorts entering March Madness, and we definitely would have taken them over Kentucky or Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
And now we sit looking at them as perhaps the biggest threat, you know, still standing. They're playing much better. And clearly they are the type of team with the media bias that you get nationally. It's going to get all the talk and all the hype, and that's okay.
Yes.
It's okay that nobody's talking about Kansas Villanova right now and all the focus is on Duke and Carolina. Can you ever imagine a scenario in which the last one seed standing, who has the last first-team All-American standing, isn't being talked about at the Final Four nearly as much as these other storylines? It's kind of the perfect scenario to stay under the radar because we don't want to be the team everybody's talking about prior to Monday night. We want to be the team everybody's talking about after Monday night. And this is a great spot to be in that very large shadow that Duke casts. But from a matchup standpoint, like if you get that version of Kansas, and it's a huge if, because not only was the defense clicking and you turn defense into offense with transition opportunities, but for the first time, maybe all year, McCormick, Abaji, and Remy Martin were all clicking on the same night. And that hasn't happened, you know, and so that's a big if that is sustained and bottled up. But if they can, something even close to that, yeah, this Kansas team has something more so than Duke, and that's talent and experience. And I think we with that combination of talent and experience went out. So to me, we may not get another chance like this. And you know, we're going to obviously continue to go to Final Fours with regularity under Coach Self. But even he would admit that four Final Fours in 19 years, one of which was the COVID year where we didn't have a chance to play, four in almost two decades isn't enough. He would tell you he wants to be here more frequently. But even as frequently as they've come, I don't know that we'll have a situation like this where we're, in my eyes, the team to beat from a talent standpoint. There's no added pressure, believe it or not, because all the talk is about Duke Carolina. And things have just kind of fallen into place, including the Justin Moore injury to Villanova, which breaks your heart for the kid. I had a partial Achilles tear in the last year. He has a full-blown rupture, and even my partial, you know, was a three-month ordeal. His is going to be closer to a year. And to have that happen when you're 60 seconds away from the biggest stage of your career, it's just gut-wrenching for him. And yet it's another in a series of breaks that has gone KU's way. That's their second leading scorer and their best perimeter defender. And so, you know, KU is getting paid back, I think, by the universe for some previous tournament heartache and for not getting to play it in 2020 when we had the number one team with a bullet. It's in some ways a little bit of a payback there that we've had a fortuitous draw in terms of the bracket. Other teams falling without us having to face them, like Auburn, like Baylor, Kentucky, Gonzaga, name your one or two seed that's fallen. But also some key injuries to the team we're about to play right before we play them. Creighton nearly overcame the loss of Kalkbrenner, which was amazing. And I've heard people like Clark Kellogg say that first game after an injury, you can actually see an uptick. It takes its toll three and four games down the line. But that first game is kind of a galvanizing win one for the Gipper type factor. And maybe Villanova will have that. But I know this, I'd much rather face Villanova without Justin Moore than with him, and that's another great Kansas is caught. And that doesn't diminish the accomplishment at all, because in this format, you have to be both lucky and good, and I would argue both lucky and excellent. And Kansas right now, at times, has been both, and let's hope that continues for two more games.
Well, I'm always nervous about some of these situations, especially when people are overlooking a team. And I know that KU isn't, but I have fans that are KU Jayhawk fans that are already talking about who they'd rather play, Duke or North Carolina. And I try to warn them. First of all, Villanova's had KU's number a little bit. And I was there in 18 in San Antonio where they blew the doors off Kansas. And granted, that Villanova team, I think, was much better than this year's team. And they say, well, you know, they're missing Justin Moore, like you just mentioned. I said, listen, all you got to do is rewind the tape just a week or two ago. KU played against Creighton without their best defensive player, their center, and KU was up one with a minute and a half to go, and if not for a turnover of Creighton, KU might not even got out of the second round. Let's not overlook Villanova, who is a better team than Creighton. And probably even a better coach team, perhaps, depending on how you want to look at it. And the other thing, too, is Creighton didn't have much time to adjust without their player, because that was on, what was it, Thursday, and then they played KU on a Saturday 2 days later. Whereas Villanova, you know, if Justin Moore ruptures his Achilles in the first 5 minutes of the Final Four Saturday, Brian, against KU, you're scrambling. But when it happens in the Elite Eight game, now Villanova has time to make adjustments. There's some other kid that's going to get opportunity to come off the bench and make some plays, and who knows, can come out and hit five threes. You know how it is. Guys you never heard of can be heroes in a single-game situation, single-elimination tournament. Anything can happen. Listen, on paper, there's no doubt in my mind that KU is the better team. Even with Justin Moore healthy, I think KU is the better team. But here's my concern. Villanova doesn't score like they once did. That's fine. But Villanova, when they get a lead, they don't give it up very easily from what I've seen. First of all, they are an outstanding free throw shooting team. Secondly, they don't turn it over a ton. They've got a gamer at point guard in Gillespie. They've got a coach that's been there multiple times. My concern is if KU gets down and they're playing from behind most of the game, a 7-point lead might feel like 12 or 15 against Villanova. I joked about Houston Villanova, first team to 50 wins. I actually got one right for once predicting the tournament. Villanova hit 50 and won. Houston had tons of threes. They just didn't make them. They were 1 of 20, and I bet half of them were wide open. Maybe that's a little bit of luck. But my point I'm trying to say is Villanova is a gritty team that's going to circle the wagons knowing that can play the underdog role and know that everybody's going to pick Kansas to win this game. And I always worry about teams like that.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to worry about. And the defense in particular, they're going to try to muck up this game.
Yep.
They're going to try to do whatever they can to get back in transition D and slow KU's grab it and go approach. I mean, Kansas is as good a transition offensive team as there is in the country. And you heard Jim Larrañaga talk about it. From Miami, he said they're the best five-second layup team in the country. And what he meant by that was, whether it's a make or a miss on the other end, they're at the rim within 5 seconds coming back the other way. And Villanova's got some athletes that can run and get back, and they can do some things to try to, you know, jam up the works on what KU would like to do in dribble penetration and getting it downhill, getting those driving lanes when the ball reverses to the second side. They're really fundamentally sound, but Moore was a big part of that. And so it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like without him. I also think that based on their lack of depth, Kansas can run them into the ground a bit. You saw that with Miami in the second half, where there's a reason why they were outscored 47-15 and only scored 15 points in 20 minutes. Everything was coming up short. If you go back and look at their misses, they had no legs under their shots because Kansas had the pedal to the metal, and eventually the dam broke and they just ran out of gas. And so I hope that's the case for Kansas, and I hope it's similar to what you said, where there's not a 7-10 point deficit, because then Villanova can try to take the air out of the ball, and you know you don't want to get in a free throw shooting contest with a club that shoots north of 80%. So it's definitely a dicey scenario if you're playing from behind. But if you can have it neck and neck throughout, and then eventually wear them down, I think Kansas can win it going away. I think Kansas does win this by 8-10 points, and I think they're playing on Monday. But it's March Madness. Anything can happen. Jay Wright doesn't have our number a little bit. Jay Wright has our number a lot. He got us in 2016 in the Elite Eight. He got us in 2018 in the Final Four. He got us in the last regular season matchup up in Philadelphia, which was that very good 2020 team that didn't get a chance to play for it all, but they won that game. You know, they're at the home of the Sixers in Philly, which was amazing. And so he has had our number quite a bit. And there is a score to settle that won't be settled by just winning this game, I assure you. Now, we did beat Villanova and Jay Wright on the road to the title in 2008.
Correct.
But that was in a Sweet 16 matchup, not a, you know, type Final Four setting like we've seen these last couple of Final Fours. So hopefully Kansas gets a chance to inch a little bit closer to Mr. Wright. But they're going for their third title in the last six tournaments.
Yeah.
And we just need to stop and say that out loud again. I mean, that's really stinking good. I've cringed a little bit when people say Blue Blood Final Four with all four being Blue Bloods, because in my mind there's only five Blue Bloods, and then there's a second tier, of which Villanova is a very prominent player on the second tier with teams like Indiana, Arizona, you know, UConn, programs that have had a lot of titles in Final Fours but don't have necessarily, you know, the over the long haul consistent history. Now, Villanova has had great history, don't get me wrong, but there have been some gaps where they've not been as prominent. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you point to two titles in a three-year stretch, 16 and 18, and then a chance at another one this year, I mean, to call it like it is, they're doing more than we've done in terms of postseason success. And I loved it, with a capital L, sounding like Big Bye Chow here, but I loved it, bold italics, all caps, loved, when Bill Self on Tuesday said, hey, we kind of need to win this one to keep up with the teams around us, because as good as we've been with the 14 straight and all the conference championships, the one seeds, everything, the national title count is one where we fall well behind. And I love the fact that he stepped up and said that. And that doesn't, in my mind, create pressure on the players. That just shows your coach that called it like he sees it, and I respect him for it. So let's go out there and hang a sixth banner by the time I talk to you next, partner.
I don't think it's probably that huge of a deal to Bill Self, but I'm interested in your perspective. You talk to Coach on a regular basis, clearly, and cover the team. What would and you already explained kind of what a second title here would mean during the Self era. Just, well, not necessarily a second title under Bill Self, but you're talking about overall, you know, catching up with Villanova, North Carolina, and Duke here in the modern era. But what would it be? What would it mean for Self personally to get that second title? And we talked about it when he won a title in 08. It was, the monkey was off his back, you know, finally got through, won it all. And now we're 14 years later, and he hasn't won a title. He's been to the title game against Kentucky, lost it then. You talked about how they, you know, probably should be in more Final Fours because of the seed line that they've been on. What would it mean for Self and how he would be viewed if he could get that second title? Because there's not a lot of coaches. That's, two doesn't seem like a lot, but there's not a lot of coaches that have two national titles.
It would be huge. I think right now, you know, the Hall of Fame narrative for a guy who was a first ballot Hall of Famer, by the way,
yeah,
is that he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, regular season coaches of his time. You know, the 14 straight was never done before and probably will never be done again at a major conference level. The fact that the worst seed he's had in almost 20 years of Kansas is a four seed, which means you're top 16 in the country every stinking year, is unreal. And he's done the last three of these in the midst of an NCAA investigation, which has made the recruiting and the types of players he's doing it with even tougher, because you're not getting the pick of the litter. Although, kudos, they got themselves three Mickey D's All-Americans for next year, which is exciting. But my point is, his place in the pantheon of great coaches of his era, the feather in his cap is most, you know, pulled from what he's done as the consistent Big 12 champion, consistent year-in, year-out national title threat. But when you get to the postseason, the Final Fours and championships don't stack up as well with some of the contemporaries. And yet, this is a guy that still, if he wants to, has 10-plus years left to coach. I don't know that he'll want to, but I mean, he's going to have a chance to make a run at 1,000 wins if he stays around long enough. And he's going to surpass Fog Allen very quickly as the winningest coach in KU basketball history. All of these are credits to his consistent dominance and excellence, unlike any coach I've ever seen year in and year out. I mean, Kentucky has had years where they didn't even make the tournament. Carolina and Duke, similar deals where they fall into the 8 or 9 line, you know, and barely make it by the skin of their teeth if they do make it. Self is in it every year and in it as a top 4 seed or higher. But I do think that in his mind, he knows he needs to tack on one or two more titles and three or four more Final Fours. And, you know, it's probably never going to reach the numbers that Coach K did, because Coach K's been at Duke for so many seasons now to have, you know, 13-plus Final Four trips and five national titles and all that. But to me, you know, if Self could, before he hangs him up, add two more national titles and four more Final Fours, what a legacy that would be. And I don't think that that's asking for too much. I know it's been 14 years since we've won one, but now you've got as good a shot as you're going to have in a while here in these next two games. And beyond that, if he's here for 10 more years and you're competing to be a top four seed every year and a one seed every other year, which is what he's done on average, if you include 2020 when there should have been a bracket, it would be 10 one seeds in 19 years. If you play to that seed line, you're a one seed every other year and you should be in the Final Four or near it every other year. I think it's very realistic to think that he could tack on four more Final Fours and two more titles. But as we all know, just because you line up with that number next to your name doesn't mean you finish there. And it is the toughest postseason format of any American sport. It's why it's so much fun to watch if you're an underdog and you're benefiting from watching the Goliaths fall. And it's absolutely gut-wrenching if you are one of them, like Baylor going out in round two or Gonzaga going out in the Sweet 16. It'll rip your heart out and eat it in front of you while you die, watching, you know, a season of 5.5 months of excellence melt away in one day based on a bad matchup, an untimely injury, or something like that. It's the cruel truth of the way we award our champion, which, I'll be very honest, you know, Self said it himself. Not at any point this year did he think this Kansas basketball team was the best team in the country. He certainly did in 2020. Yeah. He's not at this point. Now, they could wind up there, and it would be a great example of how this tournament product does not award necessarily the best team. It awards the team that had the best timing and you know, some fortunate breaks along the way. And there are umpteen examples of Kansas clubs that were far more talented and accomplished that didn't make it nearly as far as 2018 or 2022 because things didn't break their way. And yet you don't apologize for any of that. And to some degree, this is kind of the universe paying KU back a little bit for some of those heartaches and wrist breaks and bad legs. You know, you think about Hass in 97, yeah. Embiid going back to his lone year at Kansas. You think about all the teams that shoulda, coulda, woulda. Maybe this is a little bit of payback that we've caught some good fortune along the road to being maybe in the best position self-spin at a title since that Monday night in April of 2008.
Yeah, and it's not just KU. Kentucky undefeated, didn't win a national championship. UNLV undefeated, lost in the Final Four. You mentioned KU 97. There's many examples. The best team doesn't win this tournament, no question about it. Real quickly, you said Villanova. You like the matchup against Villanova. KU 8 to 10 points. Duke, North Carolina. If KU does do what you predict, KU will be in the national title game on Monday. Who does KU play on Monday? You think it's going to be Duke?
I only had time to print one spotting board, so I had to guess who's it going to be. and I printed a Duke board. And by that I mean, like, I put in 5 hours of prep making up the board. And if Carolina wins, then I'm going to put 5 hours of prep in on Sunday. But I didn't have time to do 10 hours, one of which I wouldn't see. So I hedged my bets and went with the Coach K, you know, swan song, and then getting them in the final meeting here, even though who would have thought Carolina would beat Coach K in Cameron Indoor in his last game ever there? And who would have thought that they beat Baylor as well? I mean, they've had an amazing run under Hubert Davis and Roy Williams watching from the stands every step of the way. So they could certainly win. But I'm showing you my cards. You're playing poker, and I just turned my hand over. I've got spotting charts for Monday already, and they're both a darker shade of blue.
Well, I hope your predictions are better than mine, because if I made those predictions, it'd be Carolina Villanova in a championship on Monday.
Right.
That's how things
are
going.
And it could be. Yeah,
it's true. Enough. And that would be a rematch of a game played of what was not too long ago. That was a 3-pointer at the buzzer to win the game. By the way, Bill Self, crazy numbers you gave, but I'll add some. In 18 tournaments with KU, because 1 year canceled due to COVID, 9 Elite Eights in 18 years. Think about how many programs would like to be in the Elite Eight every other year on average. And he's taken 3 schools, Tulsa, Illinois, and KU, to the Elite Eight. That's pretty doggone impressive, and 11 Elite Eights overall. But yes, you're right. More Final Fours, more national championships would add to his legacy, no question. All right, time for the off the wall. Before we let you go, we know you're busy. The best year of your life, the best year of your life. We were talking about it today on the morning show. I said 1976 because the world was blessed with me coming into the world. Ha ha. Joke. 1990, we had a listener call in. He said, 1990 is the greatest year of my life. He said, I graduated high school. I met the woman of my dreams, and I saw 4 concerts that year, Judas Priest, AC/DC, Def Leppard, Motley Crue. I said, man, that's pretty cool. He goes, well, let me tell you about the woman I met. I said, I don't care. Tell me about the concerts. But 1990, he said, was an awesome year. What's the best year of your life? What's a year that pops in your head and you go, man, that was a great year?
Well, for me, personally, it was 2016. That was the year that I got named Voice of the Jayhawks, and along the road to that, got to call my first NCAA tournament game for basketball with Tubby Smith and Texas Tech, and then got to call the College World Series on the same day that I was named Voice of the Jayhawks. Tech beat number 1 Florida in Omaha,
man.
And it was my greatest day on air as the Tech announcer, and you know, one of my last 2 days on air as the Tech announcer. So it was a special day for all those reasons, but the biggest of which was, I was coming home, and 2016 was a homecoming for me to return home with not only the dream job, but to get to be around my loved ones and friends and all that. Get to be on with Wade Gershner, who the world blessed us with in 1976. Wouldn't have been possible without the 2016 homecoming. So that's the best year of my life by far.
I like it. Well played, my friend. Have a great time in New Orleans, and hopefully next week you and I are talking about KU and the run to a national championship.
Gosh, I hope so, brother. We'll do a special show if that's the case. And I'm obviously feeling good, but we also know that Jay Wright and Villanova is very capable, so we're not counting our Jayhawks before they hatch. But I'll leave you with this. I said this to a couple of friends of mine. I said, you know, hopefully, Lord willing, I'll have a chance to call a few more of these Final Four trips. But I don't know if we'll ever have a situation quite as set up as this one. You know, not only based on the injury to Justin Moore, but just all the hype we talked about, it's on everybody but us, and the ability to slide under the radar. You don't get chances like this. So by golly, we got to go out there and seize it. Let's take what's ours. Let's hang that 6th banner, and let's have some fun talking about it next Wednesday or next Thursday on this show. Thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate the coverage all year long. Let's go get 2 more.
Sounds good. Talk to you next week.
All right. See you, bud.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. Live from the Final Four in New Orleans, it is KU Villanova pregame at 4:30, tip time 5:09 this Saturday on Z96.3 The Lake.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.